entrepreneur themselves is the one that stops the growth.
They never really figured out how to market their business.
I think they don't use it because they don't know how to.
AI without actual knowledge is sloppy.
Their ego won't allow them to reach out for help.
Most companies do not have a lead problem. They have a visibility problem.
It's okay to fail. You just need to be able to fail forward.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
We're hosting a small one-day event in Miami on May 22nd. If you're running a home service company doing a few million a year and feel like you should be further ahead, this is for you. We're breaking down how to scale past 10 million using systems, AI, and marketing that actually turns leads into revenue. I'll be there with Benny Fisher and Nihal Kaiser, both bringing real experience from scaling and building serious companies. Small room, serious operators. Comment Miami and I'll send you the details.
All right, guys. Thank you for welcome to the show. I'm excited to have Noah Williams. We had a great conversation. You actually drove here from Virginia, right? Correct?
Yeah, we were up in Albany, New York prior to this, though. So Albany down to Miami. We stayed in Georgia, got stuck a little bit in Georgia, and then came down here. So it's pretty crazy. Just
Albany from how far was the drive?
How long was the drive, guys? Was that 25 hours? 20 plus for sure.
That's crazy.
We were in Houston, drove from Houston to Albany. So that was its own trek in itself. And then we're going from Miami here back up to Houston. So it's going to be lots of travel, lots of road time. We connected when I was on the road there.
Yeah.
Just talked for, half an hour, had a really good conversation. So glad we got to connect and do this in person, man.
Yeah. I'm excited to talk to you. Welcome to Miami.
Welcome to Miami. Let's go. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Noah. I know we just met a couple months ago, but tell us about yourself, what you have going on.
Dude, we have a lot going on. I'd say the long story short, I'm an entrepreneur that has a passion for solving problems and helping people.
Mm-hmm.
From that, I've realized that it's not just one business that is going to solve the problems that need to be solved. It's creating networks that can sustain multiple different avenues, a network that can support homeowners in finding a contractor, and a network that can support contractors in finding the correct vendor. So the correct CRM, the correct marketing agency, such as yourself. Maybe somebody's trying to implement a hiring system and they don't really know how to do that. We would help them restructure that process for themselves. Say, hey, your business is here. What does it need to look like? And then we help point them in the right direction for that coach that would build out that system for them.
Yeah.
So really just making sure that people are clear on the decisions that they're making.
Yeah, we talked about this last time. You mentioned that sometimes owners, they want growth, but there's things that are preventing them from growing their business. What are the things that prevent them from growing their business?
The number one thing I think is themselves. Like themselves, the owner themselves is the one that stops the growth. John Maxwell has a law of leadership called the law of the lid. Like as a leader, if you don't continue to grow yourself, then you're never going to be able to get your team to that next level. I think a lot of owners, they've had a lot of success. Who they are has gotten them to where they are. And having somebody else come into their business and tell them that they need to do something different, or maybe they have a sales rep on their team telling them that they're not understanding a system. When you have an owner that his whole identity is based off of doing things right, now he has to do things wrong, a lot of times that guy doesn't make the decision to choose to do the things the right way. He chooses to stay where he's at. He stays stuck, stays stagnant, and that's why they're the biggest bottleneck in their business.
What do you think that happens, though, with owners?
I think specifically they don't know how to admit they're wrong. Like I think they think that they're right, and they don't know how to admit when they're wrong. They don't know where they're wrong.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the people that they're looking to for help don't know where they're wrong.
Yeah.
So they're going to these companies, hey, I need leads, right? Well, the issue isn't the leads. The issue is the fact that you don't have the right system in place to capture the lead once it comes in.
Yeah.
Like you can get the form in all day long, but if you're not calling them, that's the problem. And then, well, when you have somebody in place, where's the script and what's their SOP look like that shows them that they need to pick up that phone as soon as that form comes in? What are your automations like to make sure that that form is automatically in their inbox and automatically on their task list to where they don't have to think about it? But see, that's the stuff that the owner has to think about that's different than what he had typically been operating as.
Mm-hmm.
That's where they stop
because
they don't want to think. It's so much better for them to go get the hit of dopamine, going and making a sale, going and closing a deal, going to a networking event, getting looked at like they're the owner, than it is to sit in silence and figure out their problems.
Yeah. I saw you post, and this is something that we talked about. You did it for more engagement, but what is your opinion on lead aggregators, companies like HomeAdvisor, Angie's List?
I love them.
They have a mixed reputation in the home services space. Basically, every home service brand, the major ones, use them, and they're very popular. I think, and my understanding, I think over 200,000 contractors are on HomeAdvisor. So it's huge, right? It's a huge, it's a multi-billion dollar operation.
Yep.
Why do you think there's so much mixed opinions for lead aggregators with home service companies?
Companies don't have the right process in place to use a lead aggregator, mm-hmm. right? In order to have a lead aggregator actually be useful and have a high ROI, you actually have to have somebody controlling the initial lead intake.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have somebody that can go out and close the deal, and they need to make sure that everything goes right. If you don't have those three elements in your business chugging along smoothly, you're going to have leads come in all the time. You're going to keep paying them. You're going to get frustrated. You might close a couple deals, but you're never going to get what you actually should out of it. I think the other complaint I hear a lot about Angie leads is the amount of people that go out to the lead. Like, so you're afraid of a little bit of competition because the other guy is coming out here and going to give an estimate too? Like, that doesn't make any sense. If you want exclusivity, great, but homeowners don't think like that, right? Homeowners don't want just one option, right? They want to feel like they're a part of making a bigger decision. So that's why they go to a platform like Angie Leads, like HomeAdvisor, like Thumbtack, because they know that that person is going to take them and it's going to connect them to a couple places. They can rely on that person. And at the end of the day, if a roofer is not putting their money into a lead aggregator, the companies that are get the lead. That's simple.
Yeah.
So you either have the opportunity to talk to the homeowner and go prove that you're the best, or you don't. So do you want to prove that you're the best, or do you just want to sit back and complain and wonder why you don't have any revenue coming in?
Yeah, I think lead aggregators are both a blessing and a curse. A blessing is that if you know what you're doing, it allows you to quickly scale a home service brand. That's why every major home service company, you know, that is a major
every
brand.
Every single one.
They all use lead aggregators.
Absolutely.
Because they need the volume.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, what's happened is that these companies have been around since the 90s, right? Over 35 years. And if you look at every other industry, most industries do not have lead aggregators. They don't have lead brokers. They actually know how to market. So what's happened is that a lot of these companies, they never really figured out how to market their business. They just think, hey, I need a lead. I buy leads. Let me get some business.
Mm.
And you can actually scale a business that way if you have a solid sales process. The issue.
What other types of businesses are you referring to?
Well, I'm talking about local businesses like attorneys, right?
True.
Doctors, chiropractors, other businesses, any personal trainers and stuff. These guys don't have the ability to, hey, I'm going to go to a HomeAdvisor and buy leads. It doesn't happen that way, right? So they actually have to understand, especially lawyers and stuff, they have to know like, hey, I need to spend a certain amount of money because I need to advertise to grow my business. So yeah, that just puts you in a different mindset right away. The mindset that a lot of contractors face is that, hey, I'm just going to buy leads. They don't really understand the mechanism behind how to actually...
So much that goes into them getting that lead.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so
there's so much more that goes into that.
That's kind of the blessing and the curse. And there's pros and cons. Like if I started a home service company, I would definitely use the lead aggregators. I wouldn't use it as a primary source, but I would do everything. Do a little bit of Facebook, Google, local service ads, website SEO. I'll do a little bit of everything. Also use lead aggregators, right? Because if they want to scale the business, they have to use that in order to be successful. And the ones that know how to do it, you talked about this, they actually have training. They have training. How to answer the phone is different, and how to actually sell and set the appointment is different on a home advisor lead versus a Google lead versus a website lead versus a referral. It's all different. And the way you approach it is different for each channel.
Yeah.
I don't know if you experienced that with your other company, if you had that.
We didn't have different ways to answer the phones. Yeah. We just had a script that encompassed all of it.
Yeah.
And then based on what it was, we were adjusting some things. But the main goal of all of it was we need to set up a time to come out and meet with both homeowners.
Yeah.
That was our goal. Like
Two-legged appointments.
Yeah. We needed to have a two-legged appointment every single time. I know that my sales reps can go out and they can have success if I connect them with one person, but they're not going to have near as much if they don't have both people there. I don't care. There's a lot of coaches and trainers out there, I think, that talk about closing the deal even when there's only one party present. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should ever do that. I think that it causes way more problems on the back end of the project than what should ever be there. So you just make sure that both people are there. Your script, that's all we really worried about. We didn't really look at, you know, Home Advisor or Google or website having a full, totally different script. It's just we need to make sure both parties are there. From that script, we're going and meeting with them, closing the deal, and doing what we need to.
Yeah, yeah. So, what do you do? Because I'm curious, because I actually saw a post on LinkedIn by Marcus Sheridan. I don't know who, you know, Marcus Sheridan, but he had a post on LinkedIn that said, had a situation where one of our coaching clients had, you know, they were trained where they had to do two-legged appointments. The wife was there and then the husband wasn't there. She's going to be 20 minutes late. What ended up happening is that the husband didn't show up later, and then the sales rep didn't actually do the appointment because the husband wasn't there and ended up going with someone else. I know it's a tough situation. Typically, like, I'm curious about how do you handle that?
So there's certain things you have to do, right? If you show up to a house and there's only one party present, you don't go and start building value.
Yeah.
You don't start to go close the deal. You never try to close the deal. You never try to build the value until both people are there to fully understand the value. Before the value, though, you need to establish urgency. Before urgency, you need to establish trust. So trust and urgency can still be established with one party being present, okay? We can still get on the roof. We can still do our inspection. We can come back down and show our inspection video to build professionalism, create urgency. And prior to that, we should have had a good trust building step where we're able to establish bi-directional trust with the homeowner. So if we've done that, like if we show up and the wife's there, I'm still forming trust with her. I want her to trust me and I want to trust her. I'm still going to get on my roof, do the inspection. When I come back down, though, I'm not going to go and explain anything about what we can do to fix the problems that I just showed her.
Yeah,
I want those problems to sit in.
Got it.
And I want to be able to explain those in a different way than what anybody else has ever explained them.
How do you build trust with the homeowner?
So asking a lot of questions. So who, what, when, where, why, and how. When you think of those questions, who, what, when, where, why, how, anything that you see around a customer's property, like, hey, how long have these cameras been sitting here? Who put them here? Why did they get put here? How did they get put here? When did they get put here?
Yeah.
All those questions start to get somebody thinking. What you want to recognize is when a homeowner starts to give you information that you didn't ask for. That's how you know that you're starting to establish trust. Okay? I call it going three levels into a conversation. So you get the homeowner to tell you something about something, that's one level. About something, that's another level. About something, that's the third level that you didn't ask for. So in the conversation, as we're talking, I'll ask you about your watch, we'll ask you about the cameras. My goal is to get you to give me some information, answer my question, and then start uncovering and giving more info that I didn't ask for. Like, hey, how long have you guys lived at this house? Man, I've lived here for about 5 years. Perfect. They told me something about something I asked. And then, yeah, we lived here for 5 years. I moved here from Miami, and my grandkids, they go to this school next door. Now we're going two levels in. And my grandson, Noah, really loves playing soccer. Now I'm three levels in. I've now established bi-directional trust on that topic. What I'm looking for is three different times in the initial conversation with the homeowner that happens. Three times, three levels in, trust is good to go. You ask your discovery questions, you go do your inspection, create your urgency in the situation, like what we were saying, homeowner, you know, two-legged appointment, both aren't there.
Yeah.
We would reschedule it and move on. It's really about finding the things that can get the homeowner to talk. Like, this is something that they want to talk about. Okay, well, man, your grandson plays soccer. Perfect. Like, what position does he play? How long has he played soccer?
And okay, so you build trust. Now, how do you build urgency?
The urgency is through the digital exam. So getting up on the roof, creating a digital exam, we follow a specific formula called the work formula, where we walk up to the issue in our video. We observe the overall condition. We talk about the risk factors, and then we keep that video under 2 minutes every time. So it's a very specific formula that we teach the people that we're coaching and people that we're working with on how to go out and explain that the issues on a roof to a homeowner in a way that creates urgency but doesn't overwhelm them. The biggest thing is not overwhelming them. Like, if you go and a homeowner has holes in their roof and they have granules missing and they have nail pops and they have bad chimney flashing, and you go and you start showing them photos of everything and you're swiping on the screen, their mind goes to, well, what are you swiping on next? What's next? What's next? What's next? When is this going to stop? I'm looking at all these photos. Man, that's 100 photos you just tried to show me.
Yeah.
Or you send them an inspection report, right? Here's all the things that we found wrong. 20-page document. Have fun, Mr. Jones. Take a look at all the things I found wrong on your property.
So you provide them a report and a two-minute video, you said?
It's a two-minute video.
How do you do the video? Just a regular iPhone video?
Use a GoPro.
GoPro?
Yep. Use a GoPro. We use inspection tools, thermal imagers, digital microscopes. A lot of the tools are there to be able to help uncover what the condition was. Like, why did this roof get to this point? So it got to this point because your shingle's missing, right? They didn't get to the point where the shingles are missing just because wind came through and blew it off. It got to that point because the seal of the shingle broke. Before the seal of the shingle broke, though, the ventilation was bad. And that's what caused the heat to be so hot in the attic for the past 20 years, which is what caused that seal to break, which is what led to that shingle creasing, which is then what allowed that last storm to come through and blow it off. So, Mr. Jones, it's not the storm that just came through. It's everything that led up to it that got it to this point.
Yeah. Before, because I know you've been doing this for a while, I want to know, how do you put that together, the report? And then now, do you use AI to help you with that report?
So I don't use AI to make the report. We use AI for guys if they're looking for help with the script. Mm-hmm. So they can go in and they can talk about the conditions that they found. They can add the risk factors that they found. And then our AI tool will make a script for them to use. It'll keep that script typically under 2 minutes. As far as the basic scripting goes, we don't really use it for anything else other than that.
Yeah. I'm interested. Yeah, that's interesting because I think that's something that can help you guys is whoever you do is like, you can, the value of AI is actually the input you put. So if you have a lot of good information, what you just described is great. That can help you really put together a report much faster than you not using AI. So that would help you really just say, just put together a persuasive report. You can create even a custom GPT, which is basically just a custom ChatGPT tool that can help you like put together those reports. I think that
sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
There's a couple things like that, like tools that I'm thinking of that would be able to help guys create some videos, create some content,
yeah,
make it simple for them to know what they need to do for sure. But AI can get, it can get complicated. I feel like a lot of people nowadays are wasting their time spinning their wheels trying to build these AI tools instead of going and running their roofing business.
Yeah.
It's fun to do it, right? It's fun to go figure some of these things out, but sometimes they need to find someone like you to help them figure it out. Well,
one thing with anybody that's using AI is that AI without actual knowledge is slop. So you can really produce something that looks good if the person doesn't know what they're doing. Mm. So if you can create like a roofing report, it can create a roofing report. But if the person doesn't know what they're doing behind the roofing report, then it's going to create slop. So right. You have to really understand what that looks like first before you do that. So that's a good way to do it. Okay, so urgency. So what do you do in terms of, do you typically offer financing offers or insurance? How do you go never insurance route?
We never use that as a tool for urgency,
okay,
right? We never use scarcity as a tool for urgency. When you use scarcity as a tool for urgency, like, we're going to take this away if you don't make a decision, or you need to buy now, or you need to have financing. You don't want to think of that as a tool to control that objection. It's more of a path that they can follow that is over here if they need it. Urgency typically comes down to what they think needs done. Like, how long have you been thinking about replacing your roof? Oh, I've been thinking about it for 5 years. That tells me right there they've been thinking about this for 5 years. They haven't done anything with it. They need to have urgency to get this thing done, because if they don't like my price, there's a chance that they're going to wait another 5 years and they still aren't going to be able to afford the roof. And then they might push it off again. And then now the roof is caving in and they still can't get it done because they've been delaying it and delaying it and delaying it and delaying it because they didn't have the urgency.
Yeah.
So urgency is simply getting the project fixed. They need to believe that they need to have that project fixed. Before you can do that, you need to build the trust though. And you can't tell them that they need to go change something and need to fix something until you've established that trust.
Yeah. I think what you described is kind of talks to your name, right? The home doctor system.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, if you're a doctor,
literally,
you're basically asking questions. You're trying to get that diagnosis.
Yep.
And then you can give a prescription to the actual, hey, here's what you need.
Yep.
And you're not really pushing them, but you're just saying, this is what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you're going to listen to the doctor typically.
Correct. But then there's like, at the same point, you're not going to trust a doctor if you show up and the doctor's wearing sandals and he's wearing shorts. So, like, you need to look the part. You need to be the roofer. You need to be the roof doctor. You need to be the person going out. That person knows, that's the guy that knows what he's doing. Not because of all the information you can give him, but because of how you know how to give the information.
Yeah.
If you go to a doctor and you tell him you have a headache and you have these symptoms and these symptoms and these symptoms, does he ever tell you right away what's wrong? No. You still got to get your blood pressure. How is this relevant that I got to get my blood pressure right now for my headache, dude? No. We just got to get it. We got to make sure we check all the boxes. Perfect. But what they do is they take the blood pressure and they take your temperature and they check your ear infection, or they do the ear inspection. They check for an ear infection. We think that some of these things are pointless, that it doesn't really matter. But what would happen if they did? What would happen if they skipped it?
No.
Are we going to trust that guy?
No.
No. So why are we skipping getting onto the roof and doing the inspection and using a freaking drone to fly us around? If it's steep, whatever. Why are we not getting into attics? Why are we not trying to have a connection with the homeowner that you're going to be taking thousands of dollars from? We don't want to be a doctor. We just want to get paid what a doctor gets paid and not do the work. We're leveling up the industry with home doctor. That's the whole point of what we're doing, is to get guys to see that they need to level themselves up. They need to hold themselves to a new standard. They need to hold their team to a new standard. They need to hold the community to a new standard. That's what has to happen.
Yeah. So you are more proponent. So you're saying meeting the homeowners always in person?
Always.
Always in person?
Always, always.
And building the connection.
Always.
It's like sitting at the kitchen table.
Sitting at the kitchen table.
Building the connection.
Sitting on the couch, dude. Yeah. Sitting on the couch. One of my favorite things to do is to walk in and just sit on the couch and watch all the pressure go away.
Yeah.
Homeowner thinks you're there to go sell them. Everybody else that knocks on the door is immediately trying to go out and talk about the roof and talk about the problems. When you walk in, you just go sit on the couch. Hey, I've had a long day. Just let's sit down for a couple minutes. I want to get to know you a little bit.
Yeah.
Everything just goes away. Now the homeowner is open to establishing that bidirectional trust.
Yeah. That's interesting. What do you think about virtual inspections? And because there's not many roofing companies, but more in the solar space, I would say, and other trades where they're moving into that e-com virtual model where they're giving, like you said, drone inspections, they're giving online inspections, and they're kind of selling through the phone. Selling through Zoom.
It's all selling, right?
Yeah.
Like it's all selling. So you can sell anything if you have enough of a story and you can plant enough of a belief.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can possibly do a virtual inspection the right way. I don't think you can. A drone inspection, you can get some data, but you're still not able to see the things on the ground that the homeowner doesn't see. Like a homeowner, when they call you for a roof, they're not they don't know exactly what they want. They don't. Like, everybody says, well, that homeowner wanted to use somebody cheaper. That's not what everybody in our market does. It doesn't matter because the homeowners don't know. They don't know. It's up to us to educate them. If we can't get on the roof and do an inspection to build the value to show that we're the real doctors, then are we really just the doctor? Are we just a dummy online on a YouTube channel telling people what they need to be doing? Like, you can go get a lot of doctor's advice from YouTube. You can go do that for sure.
Yeah.
Is it the same thing though? Not really.
Yeah.
Virtual means close to reality, but not. Like, virtual's, it means not real.
Yeah.
Like, virtual's not real.
Yeah. Okay, so that's interesting because you mentioned something right now that's very interesting. The homeowner doesn't really know when they call you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I try to explain to a lot of our clients, because if you look at the roofing industry, 80% of demand, 75% of demand is roofing repair. So what I mean by that is people are looking to repair their roof instead of replace their roof. Because people don't want to replace
their roof. Who wants to replace their roof?
It's a pain in the ass.
No.
It's,
who wants to replace their car every time they need an oil change?
Yeah, exactly. And it's not like a sexy thing that you're buying, like a boat or a car, where people actually want to buy something like
Make it sexy, like though. Yeah. Make it sexy. Yeah. Make it a fun purchase.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do, is make it a fun purchase.
Exactly, exactly. Basically, yes, the demand is there for roofing repair. So when somebody calls, they are, hey, I need there's something wrong with my roof, but they don't know what it is. They want a repair because it's probably cheaper, but they might actually need a replacement. A lot of contractors that we've worked with before say, oh, that person just needs a repair. It's a replacement. They don't even look at it because that's a repair work. We don't do repair work. How do you turn that opportunity, because I think it is a good opportunity, into an actual, even if it's a repair, to repair, or even to an actual full replacement?
Yeah.
How do you turn that?
How do you turn it?
Yeah.
So my first question is, are you asking if they want to repair, or are they telling you they want to repair? Because I've had clients where in their script, one of their questions is, do you want a repair or do you want a replacement? Where they were naturally funneling people in to say that they wanted a repair. And then once they were in the repair, it went to the service tech, they did the repair, and then they moved on.
Exactly. I think that's not the right way to do it.
No.
The right way to approach.
You set the appointment the same way you typically would.
Yeah.
Set it a two-legged appointment. Send one of your sales reps out. Have them do a full process. Have them form trust. Have them form urgency. And in a homeowner that needs a repair done or wants a repair done, you're going to find that out in step one of the sales process. You're going to find it out through trust building and through discovery that they want a repair. Mm-hmm. You don't push them at all at that point. That's one of the ways that guys go wrong, right? It's right when a homeowner says, I just want a repair, they're like, well, we don't do repairs. Okay, you just shot yourself in the foot. You just told them you don't do that.
Yeah.
Wait until you get on the roof and take your video to be able to create the urgency to actually show them that they need the job done before you tell them that you can't do it.
Yeah.
So follow a process. Somebody that wants a repair, we're going to go out. We're going to have them watch our test case sheet. Our test case sheet of all of our homeowners that we worked with that previously wanted a repair but ended up going with the full roof replacement. That'll be a really cool thing. I'll show you some.
What's a test case? What is that?
A test case is a sheet. So we have I wonder if they can grab me a test case sheet. It's probably out in the van. But test case sheet is a laminated sheet, just a laminated piece of paper. Has a QR code in the middle of it. Lots of photos around it of homeowners that we have worked with. Hmm. When homeowner scans that QR code, it takes them to a landing page. That landing page is broken down based on the customer objection and then the things that we form trust on. There's 3 videos per landing page. For each video the homeowner watches while we're doing an inspection, we take $100 off of their job. So in step one, we're asking the discovery questions to pull out their objections and their pain points. That tells us that, oh, they're looking for a cheap roof. I know that they only want this repair done, so I'm going to give them my test case sheet of all the people that I've worked with that had the same exact objection. So somebody that said they wanted a repair, they wanted to get it done cheap. Homeowner would scan that QR code. This is like an act I'm kind of walking you through right now, but we would ask the homeowner to pull up their phone while we're doing our inspection, pull up your camera, scan this QR code while we're doing the inspection. For each one of these videos you watch, you get $100 off. They're watching videos of their exact objection.
What does the video say? Like, what do the videos say?
It's a homeowner talking through their experience.
About their specific objection?
About their, hey, I met, my name's Jay, and I chose the all side way. When I first met Noah, this is how we met him. These were my initial hesitations. They were new in business, had some companies come out. Noah did an inspection. I ended up buying upgrades. He worked with my insurance. So it just tells the whole customer story from that customer's perspective of what they got done and how we were able to help them get that done. We know based on how we track our sales appointment results, what that homeowner initially had in our sales process. So once we sell a job, we take the data from the sales appointment result and then the data after the job is done, and we cross-reference those to get better data when we're out in front of the home. So I'll have to like help you visualize this. Maybe you can clip it in like what the actual sheet is. But basically three testimonial videos that are on this one funnel. There's 30 different funnels, 30 different sheets, 30 different QR codes that our sales guys could have used. But it was all like, oh, this is the homeowner that loves all the dogs. So every homeowner in that funnel was holding their dog while they're talking about how we did their roof replacement and how we helped them and how we even took care of their dog. So we give that one to all the customers that have little dogs running around.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's cool. I haven't heard that before. That's a good strategy I haven't seen before. It's pretty cool.
Nobody's doing it.
Yeah.
So you guys are getting some really like insider info.
Yeah,
right,
it's
there.
Good stuff. I think it could be very useful. And you have the same objections. Basically, you already have them. Hey, these are the most common 30 objections I have.
Yep.
Got it. And then basically every time, hey, just here's the thing. Got it. That's cool stuff. I like that.
And our thing is we get the objection before we need to get the objection.
Yeah.
Like I'm not getting the objection when I go to show the pricing. I'm getting the objection before I even get on the roof. Like I want to know why they're not going to buy before I get on the roof so that I can give them the test case sheet that they need to watch that's going to help handle their pain points before I even go down and have to handle them myself.
Yeah. What do you think about technology in terms of CRMs? What are the most common reasons why contractors, so they have, most of them do have CRMs now at this point. Most have CRMs, but they don't really use them properly.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, when you come into the business and you work with a client, is that one of the first things you look at? Tell me about how you look at that.
Correct. So first thing we're typically doing is doing a full audit on the business. We're looking at all their systems, all their processes. What's their CRM look like? What are their marketing systems looking like? What are their hiring systems like? What's their onboarding process look like? Do they have their SOPs documented? When you have a CRM, right, you want to look for consistency. Like, are they using this consistently, or is this just like a random tool that they thought was cool and could do one little thing that they wanted it to do, so they got it for that tool.
Yeah.
We're looking at all the jobs that they've done. Like if they have everything in the CRM, we know that everything's moving. We're looking for stagnant jobs, so jobs that have just been sitting there for over 90 days with no movement, no notes, no updates. I think that a lot of people just don't have the architecture of the system to be able to use the system.
Mm.
Like, you can have a system, but if you don't have the architecture of the system matched to how your business operates, then it's not gonna work. But then what's the next problem? Most people don't have a set way they operate. So then you have a company here that doesn't operate in a set way every time, trying to work with a company here that doesn't have a set way to operate. This company doesn't know what's happening over here. This company, meaning CRM company, is trying to operate with this roofing company that doesn't have a set operation in place. They're trying to give them ideas and things that would make it easier for them to do their job, not making sure that this guy has his right process. So before you even like get to the point where you're starting to update or change a CRM, you have to have your full company workflow established. Like, you need to know your way of doing things every single time, how you operate, and then any system can be duplicated to match it, any of them.
Yeah. And it's a funny thing, because once you built out the system, you'll know if it's sufficient once you start scaling the company, and you're going to see that there's evolution between 5 million, 10 million, 20 million, 30 million. And there's going to be an evolution with that system and the workflows. But yeah, that's the first thing. That's one of the things. And keep in mind, guys, if you are, you know, in business, companies that do it the right way, they actually have CRM integrators that actually implement it for their systems, and they spend a lot of money. I mean, depending on the system you use, the most expensive option in the home services space is ServiceTitan, but typically it's Salesforce is the most expensive option, like if you look at the CRMs, and they have billion-dollar marketplaces that people use and build apps from, and they typically hire a CRM integrator. They spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, sometimes potentially millions of dollars, to integrate their systems. That's why it's so important. It's the foundation when you build that. So when you do any type of marketing, anything like that, you have that in place first before you actually do any of this stuff, because that's really what hurts a lot of contractors.
Yeah, I think you asked why they don't use it. You asked that a little bit. I think they don't use it because they don't know how to. And they don't know how to because the system's not built to the way that they can easily understand it. And it's just a bunch of people trying to make money off of a product and, hey, come buy my new CRM. And all of the grass is greener on the other side syndrome comes in, and that roofer can't stay stagnant and grounded enough to even figure out how to use the thing he's already paid thousands of dollars to figure out.
Yeah, yeah. And I had this gentleman named Corey Combs. I don't even know who he is.
I know Corey.
Southern Shore Exteriors, a company in Florida.
Yep.
He had, one of the things that he mentioned when he was on the podcast is that he had a lot of frustration hiring agencies and working with different marketing companies. And that once he figured out his actual full funnel from the lead to actual inspection to the appointment and actual sale, and he can see the actual drop off, then he can see the actual visibility. It's basically what he said, and I agree with him, is that most companies do not have a lead problem. They have a visibility problem. They don't know what's actually going on the back end that prevents them from being successful with the leads that come in.
Yeah.
So that's something very interesting. He actually, you know, spent a lot of money on that.
Yeah.
So that's one of the first things you do when you come into a company.
Yeah. That's like one of the very first things we do, is map out all their process. We have like a template, the master way that we do things that we can implement into a company if they don't have that. But our goal is to take that and be able to edit it and templatize it to where it matches the company's workflow that we're working with.
And typically, do you work with insurance or retail, or just does it matter? Both?
Yeah, both. You know, we've worked with some bathroom companies, really anybody in the home improvement sales industry. Like, it's all very similar. You sell, build, and collect.
Yeah.
You got to go out, sell the job, you got to be able to build it, and then you got to be able to collect it. There's different exact processes that happen, but the overall flow is the same.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier, I think this is kind of it's a unique industry, because there, for whatever reason, in the roofing space, there's people with big egos.
Oh yeah.
And you look at other verticals, I think most business owners, some of them have big egos and all that. But I think for whatever reason, roofing, it's like attorneys and stuff and doctors, there's like huge egos for whatever reason. How do you think that prevents them from actually growing the business?
How does the ego prevent them from growing the business? It doesn't allow them to see where they're wrong. It doesn't allow them to see where they're wrong. It doesn't allow them to want to run towards failures. It makes them think that failures are bad. And when the failures are bad, a lot of times guys don't know how to cope with that. They don't know how to realize that, man, shit's just falling apart. And sometimes shit has to fall apart to be able to figure out where the pieces need to get put back together. And when you have a high ego and every bit of your DNA is built off of having things go the right way. And I'm saying this from experience, because like past year and a half has been crazy. I went from having a roofing business, selling it, had some issues with a partnership that fell through, been able to just crazy ups and downs, and like realizing that regardless of what you're doing, as long as you're still able to move forward and you learn from every mistake, nothing else matters. It does not matter how somebody sees you. It doesn't matter how somebody looks at you. What matters is how you move forward. And most of these guys get stuck on how people look at them, and that stops them from moving forward. Like, there's thousands of people that see my Facebook every single day that I know are watching the content, that I know need the help, but their ego won't allow them to reach out for help. They don't want to admit that they need it. Admitting help is like saying you're doing something wrong, and people don't want to admit and don't want to think it's okay to do something wrong. It's okay to do something wrong. It's okay to fail.
Yeah.
You just need to be able to fail forward.
I think a lot of people, that does prevent them from moving forward, is actually admitting they need help. And I think that's okay. I think it's okay to ask for help. You know, at the end of the day, like, there's nobody teaching you. There's no business school. You know, you could go to business school, but they don't really teach you how to run a business. You have to just learn from experience. There's no, like, when you first start a business, you really don't know what you're doing. At the end of the day, you have to kind of learn on the fly.
Figure it out.
And the best teacher is experience, but learning from the experience too.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't learn from the experience, and you're going to keep making the same mistakes. And that's a big issue.
Yeah.
So that is a thing that I've seen. What do you think about, you know, we talked about lead aggregators and brokers and all that. Now, technology, talk a little bit about CRM, but are you using, how are you seeing AI play a role in terms of the home services space?
I think AI will get to a place where you don't need to send emails anymore. All of your repetitive tasks, like all your data entry, every single bit of data entry, you sell a job, you put it into a spreadsheet to track your margins, your profit and loss on projects. I think it's going to get to a place where it handles a lot of your marketing, content creation, copywriting. It's going to handle your hiring. I mean, there's funnels now where you can go buy. Bot Rep is one of them. Bot Rep is by Dan Wright with Cruiter.
Mm-hmm.
He was a recruiting agency, but that system, you can literally get a funnel that when somebody fills out a form to apply for a position, the AI automatically calls them, does an interview. If they qualify for a second interview, it emails them a link to sign up for the second interview, and then AI handles that second interview as well. Like, you can literally have it handle pretty much anything with communication, anything repetitive in the business now.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Where do people find you?
So they can find me on Facebook, Noah Williams. If you look up thesyndicatemastermind.com, that's our website landing page. You can get some more information about the syndicate, what we have going on there. But I'd say best place to contact me directly is Noah Williams on Facebook. If that doesn't find it, look up Noah Williams, the home doctor, and that'll definitely pop up for you.
Yeah, he's been posting a lot of content consistently. I see your content every single day. Congratulations on that.
Yeah,
are you doing a good job?
It's not easy. It is a lot of work.
Not easy in the
dude.
Beginning, especially when you're getting started. And a lot of people are afraid of putting themselves out there, but that's really what's going to make a difference in the long run. So I see you continuing doing that, and hopefully you continue doing that and see you grow.
Hell yeah.
Thanks for coming on. No, I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.
A quick thing before we get back to it. I'm hosting a small private workshop in Miami Beach on May 22nd. 30 contractors max. We're covering how to turn the leads you're already generating to actual revenue using systems and AI. The whole conversion side of your business that most people ignore. It's at the Palms Hotel, $297 to attend. And we review every application. If you're doing $2 million or more and you feel like you should be further ahead, this room is for you. Go to contractormarketingpros.net/Miami/event. Seats are going fast.